you are listening to episode 610 of the Punk News Podcast. And we're not playing music this week. And we're not doing an intro. Why? Because John is busy and he's at his wit's end and he's freaking out like the crazy guy in the mall that starts stabbing people. That's how much I'm freaking out. So yeah, man, that's how things are going. Not in a bad way, just in a crazy way. I got a lot of things happening over the next couple of weeks, and we're gonna talk about some of them. And so yeah, man, I'm feeling the squeeze, baby, and more.
Are you feeling the squeeze?
Are you feeling relaxed? Don't worry, everything's gonna be all right. Don't worry, be happy. Where are you right now?
I think the last time I was relaxed was in the womb, and even then, it's debatable. So I at a scale, I'm in a oof. The stress level is definitely there, but not overwhelming.
What's stressing you out anymore? If you want to talk about it, what's stressing you out in life?
Ooh, just everything, to be completely honest. Yes, the future. The present's not too bad, but a little bit of the present. I'm working on building my media empire, so it's just like, how do I do this? Mm. You know? that's where I'm at.
You want to be the next Mariana Huffington. Isn't that her first name? Mariana? Is that her first name? Huffington?
I'm not sure. I think that sounds right, though.
Wait. Ariana.
Is it?
Ariana. Did you say
Ariana? Ariana. That's right. Ariana Huffington.
Something like that, yeah.
So what's your media empire going to consist of? Is it going to be like opinions, news? The main question, is it going to be heavily slanted and not trustworthy, but you're going to structure it so that your readerships, you keep them coming back through throwing out like things that confirm their biases, but also things that are meant to scare them to keep them reading? Is that what you're going to do with your media empire?
Well, like, you see, there's so much potential there to just go and just like get really like, that's like comic book villain kind of vibes. So
I disagree because Elon Musk and Trump and Steve Bannon and all those guys are real, although they are comic book.
Well, villains. Yeah. I'm gonna make something so good that it will put all of those people out of business, and I will write one thing so scary it will make Stephen King shit his pants.
I bet. Oh, also, M. Moore had some ideas for Halloween episode. We'll talk about that.
Oh,
later.
Yes.
So I haven't even responded because I've been so busy. M. Moore thinks I'm blowing her off, but I'm not. I'm just really busy.
Hey.
How relaxed are you?
Like, really relaxed. I'm feeling good. I'm relaxed. Probably just because I'm like, I just happen to not be like stressing about the future right in this exact moment, which is like most times you ask me, I'm going to be stressing about the future, but like not right now. I'm feeling good.
Well, here's what I'm stressing out about, people. And I'm going to go on a rant, and I don't even really mean what I'm saying. I'm just kind of blowing off steam, and I do kind of mean what I'm saying, but not totally. So anyways, the low budget reunion show is next week, and I'm psyched about it. And there's like 15 tickets left, so things are looking real good. I'm psyched. I'm pumped. And yet again, I'm in the worst part of throwing a concert. The best part of throwing a concert is – well, the second best part is the idea – And then booking bands. You're like, oh, but what if we have this band? What if we have that band? You're like, yeah. And you email the band. You're like, hey, you want to play this show? And they're like, yeah, we do. And you're like, hooray. You know, and then like you got this like cool lineup. You're like, it's going to be awesome. Yeah. And then you announce it and you're excited. You're like, guess what? Everybody's going to be a really cool show. And the people at Punk News call you stupid and say you're ruining punk rock by throwing cheap punk rock shows somehow. I don't exactly figure out how that works. But apparently I'm ruining punk rock by throwing punk rock shows for $12. But anyway, you're excited. And then you kind of tank, you know what I mean? You're like, oh, now I got to sell tickets. And, you know, sometimes tickets pop and sometimes they don't. Lucky for me, this time tickets kind of popped right away and it was just a steady incline from there on. So this one was relatively low stress. Unlike, surprisingly, Summer 25, which had a pop and then no sales and then they just shot way up, which was rad. So anyways, so the second lowest point of throwing a concert is trying to sell tickets. Luckily, tickets sold pretty good for this already and I'm feeling good. The worst part of throwing a concert is the week and 2 weeks before we're trying to organize it. And I emailed all the bands and I said, all right, we're going to be sharing a back line. If everyone in the bands brings one item, then everyone only needs to bring one item, not everything, you know. And I've thrown a lot of shows and we've always done a back line and it really is just the way to go. Hallie Bullitt, your opinion, sharing a back line, yay or nay?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's nice, especially like in a city where maybe people are like trying to take public transportation to a show, like band members, you know, it's like, I think it's nice to have a back line, but I respect when bands just want to play on their own shit, you know?
See, I don't, and maybe I'm wrong. I mean,
yeah, like, from a musical standpoint, you might be wrong.
At punk news shows, we have a very short changeover, 10 minutes. This one, we got 15 minutes. And so I emailed all the bands, and I said, all right, do you guys want to share a backline and share gear or not share gear? If you want to share gear, email me privately and let me know what gear you want to share, and then we'll put together a backline. And out of the 3, 8, 11, 15 people playing the show, one person responded saying he was willing to share gear. Who do you think was willing to share gear out of all 15 people playing the show?
Joe Jack Talbot.
The most famous guy in the building, Joe Jack Talbot. You know, Joe is my angel, and he will forever be my angel. You know, no one else responded. And then I actually got a wacky email from one of the guys playing the show, and it was, like, really, really rude. And I'm like, man, this is like, why is this dude sending me this email? And I thought, well, maybe like the guy is kind of, I like the guy a lot, but he's kind of nutty, and it's probably not who the people are thinking of. And so I'm like, well, I'm just gonna play this off like he's joking, like maybe this is a joke, because he was like really, really rude. I'm like, people don't speak to me this way. So I responded like he was like, ha ha, you know me. And then it turned out like it was a joke, or maybe so that got cooled over, which was fine. But then like right after that, one of the other bands, they emailed me. They're like, we don't ever share a back line because I'm a professional and my dad never really loved me. So I never really got the attention that I wanted. And so I have a very sensitive ear. So I need to have the cymbal in just the right place. So when I go boom, boom, bap, I can hear the frequency and no one else can hear the frequency, but I can, cause I'm a professional drummer. Did I say that I'm a professional? Because I'm a professional. And it's really better for everyone, because that way my special symbol will be heard by everyone, and I don't want to share gear, but I, you know, it's just going to be quicker that way if we all, and if I have to share a drum, it's going to be even longer because I'll have to address that lab. I wanted to reach through my computer and strangle this guy and beat him over the head at the same time, like Goro from Mortal Kombat 1 or something. Like, the guy in this band, and this is unprofessional for me to say, but I'm not a professional. I'm not a professional. In that it's like this band is a very brand new band, and I'm happy to have them play the show. But they're literally bringing me zero tickets, so they're a charity case. And I don't mean that mean. Like, I love having bands on the bill that no one knows that are awesome. I mean, when Catbite played the Magnificent Matinee, no one knew them, and they blew the house away, you know. So I – Quam, too, at the same time, actually. So I love having unknown bands on the bill, and I prefer to. But also, you got to realize that I'm doing you a favor by having you pay the – because you're getting paid, but you're not bringing in any tickets. So you're essentially a charity case. And, like, this guy was going on and on in his email about, you know, I'm professional. And I'm thinking – I just saw the Melvins like 3 days ago. It reminded me of a time about 10 years ago. I went and saw Jello in the Bay Area, and Buzz Osborne was there. And they're like, Buzz, come on stage. So Buzz just walks on stage, and they give him a guitar, and he just destroys the place. That's a professional, not some little boom, boom, bap, bap, bap. I gotta have my warm bottle at just the right degree because I'm a big baby. Like.
But that was like someone spontaneously stepping in. That's not – you're not asking someone to play like a whole set on gear that's not theirs, if that's not how they want to play. You know, I'm not saying you're right or wrong, but I'm just saying I don't think those two situations are comparable, you know?
Well, fair. I'm trying to make this thing work, you know, and I'm at the worst part of the scheduling gig, because everyone's just sitting on their hands, except for the most famous guy there is, and he's willing to work, you know? And so I was going to send an email like, well, you guys don't want to share gear, so you all figure it out. And I thought, well, then everyone's going to hate me, and then all this work will be for naught, because all this time I'm donating and all this, you know, sweat and tears, and you know, everyone's going to hate me, so it will be pointless. So I said, let me check myself here. So I said – I emailed everybody, and I was like, well, no, only one person wanted to share gear, so everyone should bring their own gear, and that way you all have your own gear, and you all have your own back line, because that's what everyone wants to do. If you don't want to do that, then let me know ASAP. Within 2 minutes, I got a bunch of emails from the bands. Oh, can someone give us a bass cab? Can someone give us drums? And it's like, you know, and my answer, I mean, I wanted to say, no, go to hell, bring your own thing. But what I said is like, well, we'll see. A lot of people are chiming in. What can you share? And sure enough, no one responded to the what can you share email. You know what I mean? So I'm annoyed. But listen, that's part of a gig, and I'm kind of being a big baby because it's going to work out. I'm going to make it work out. And if someone comes and don't have a back line, I'm going to say, you solve it. However, as I learned last time, as I've known, if people remember from Summer Soiree 5, there was an issue with the back line with the first band playing there again. And I was so annoyed. I'm like, you solve it. Not my problem anymore. And of course, a week later, it became my huge problem. So, at Punk News, I've done two shows with other promoters or entities or whatever, and they always seem so much more disorganized. And like, they don't have the back line figured out. No one knows how much they're getting paid. No one knows when it starts. You know, no one knows what the set times are. But it always seems to work out. Like, everyone just shows up and is in a good mood and is hanging out. And like, yeah, you know, let's spray beer on each other and let's, you know, play tag, even though John's trying to set up this thing right now, you know. Or let's just be obnoxious and blow our trumpets and do these Irish jigs in the middle of the thing. People are trying to sound check, you know. And it always seems to work out for them. And me, I'm like, let's plan ahead and solve these problems. And it never does. It never does. So anyways, I ask me again in the week. I hopefully I'll be in a much better mood, which I think I will be. I'm just.
But we can ask you, like, why do you take this on? Because this isn't like, is it because you like for the bands to share a backline just so that the show just runs quicker and smoother, according, like.
Why do I take on throwing shows, or why do I take on the backline issue?
The backline, because, you know, I would say, and maybe other people have different experiences, but in my experience, either a venue has a backline or it doesn't. And I've never worked with, like, someone that was putting a show together that was nice enough to give a shit about whether I had something to play on or not. That was kind of always up to me as a musician. I'd have to ask if there was a backline or not, and if there wasn't, I'd have to ask if I couldn't get my own shit to the show. I'd have to ask another band, like, hey, man, like, I'd have to just eat shit and, like, look like such a loser and be like, can we plan all your crap? Because we all want to take the L train to the show. And, like, we can't. We're not bringing anything, you know. But it's nice that you try to solve it for people and organize it, but it's not, in my experience, that's you're kind of going above and beyond. You know what I'm saying?
Am I intruding to where I should not be intruding?
No, I think it's nice that you're doing, but if it's a total pain for you, I think you should stop doing it because you don't.
Well, honestly, sometimes a total pain. This is the worst pain it's ever been. Honestly, sometimes it's a breeze. Yeah. Maybe, but like,
yeah.
I'm definitely missing a few pieces of the puzzle after throwing shows. Because I'm always struggling to make sure everyone gets paid and not lose money. But, like, I've been to these gigs where there's, like, 20 people there and there's, like, six bands. I'm like, how are you guys, like, not losing money right and letting, you know, I'm missing a piece of the puzzle. And, like, when I deal with booking agents, it's always, like it's rarely pleasant. Or, like, in law, if you're trying to settle a case, I might say, I want $100,000. And they say, well, we only want to give $20,000. And I'm like, well, I'll settle for $90,000, but not $20,000. They're like, well, we'll settle for $35,000. You know, with booking agents, I'll email a booking agent. And they're like, well, how much can you pay? And I'll be like, $1,500. And they're like, we're not interested. That's too low. I'm like, do you want to make a counter offer? Like, you know. And then when I try to shoot with a number that I think they will accept, I often find out that I way overpaid. You know what I mean? I'm missing a piece of the puzzle with it. I need to talk to, like, someone that throws gigs and maybe like a band, like a person that's played a bunch of gigs, like Mikey Erg. I'm missing a piece of the puzzle somewhere. Anyway, to answer your question, here's why I'm taking it on. And maybe I've been off on the wrong track to begin with. The reason I'm taking on the first show I ever threw, Summer Soiree 1, World Inferno asked me to get a back line together. And all the bands that were playing, like, just seemed to be at the time, we're like, oh, is there going to be a back line there? And so my fear was, if I don't organize a back line, bands will just show up assuming there's going to be a back line and be idiots and not have a back line, and it'll be a big mess. That's my concern.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that you do it. And it is, I mean, like, as someone that's had to really scramble for gear, it is cool of you as a person organizing the show. But, you know. if it ever if it's ever bumming you out to the degree that you're like makes you less psyched to be putting on shows, you can just send out an email. It's like, there's no backline. Fucking you all figure it out. And that's not rude. That's not you being rude. It is up to them to figure it out. You know what I mean? Because generally it is up to a band to bring their own gear. If they don't want to do that, you know what I mean? I'd say like, it's nice if there's a drum kit there, because certainly like someone trying to, I don't know. I guess it's done all different ways. I'm just, and New York is like a particularly cold and hard city. Like a particularly like just fucking deal with it yourself kind of city. So maybe, yeah, maybe it's done differently in Philly. And if it is, then, you know, hats off to y'all, because I would have loved for people putting on shows to have helped me out with this shit more over the years.
Yeah, that you're New York might be dealing with it yourself, but I find if I just say like with Summer Soiree 5, where that you know they were having trouble getting a backline put together, and I'm like, can you, the first band, bring something? And they were like, no, we can't, we don't share gear. And so then I said to everyone, well, then just deal with it yourself, and no one dealt with it at all. You know what I mean? It was the night before the show, and it's not been solved. You know. So,
but did people like, would people really have just shown up without something to play on? Then again, it's kind of on you to beg the other bands, like, or you're not playing your set. You know what I mean? Like,
well, that's what I did earlier today, is I kind of bluffed and I said, well, no one's bringing anything, so you all got to bring all your own stuff. And now, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, can we borrow from you? It's like, well, you know, so as of right now, the notice is everybody's got to bring it. But also, with Summer Soiree 1 and 2, is we only had like 10-minute changeovers and no time to spare. This time, I actually got maybe 45 minutes to spare. So I actually, like, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Like maybe opening my eyes, Hallie. Like we have time to go over. And honestly, and my other perspective is bands have their set times. And if they take too long setting up, then I'll just cut in their set time and say, too bad. You know, yeah. But on the other hand, then they're mad at you when it's really their fault. You know, I don't know, man. But, you know, it's just the week before the show, and this is how it always is, and then I'll be happier next week. So
it sounds like it's going to be fun, and then I think you're going to be happy, and it's all going to feel worth it.
I still have to build the Price is Right set, which is going to take a long time, but I'm psyched to do it. So.
Again, you don't have to. You are choosing to build a Price is Right set for your punk show.
Oh no, I have to, Hallie. I have to. So anyways, come on out to Low Budget Reunion Show. There's 15 tickets left. And but listen, people, I mean, honestly, I'm really just being dramatic, and I'm just kind of letting people know, like, just the inner workings, which they might find interesting. Also, I'm just blowing off steam. I'm not really that angry. I'm a little frustrated, but I'm totally psyched on the show. Honestly, it was the email where the guy's like, well, I'm a professional and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, when the Mike Yerk band came down, they just plugged in and kicked ass for an hour. You know what I mean? That's a professional. So, you know, I was having an annoying day, and this email, this, like, what it was is he was trying to justify his stance by saying it's better for me and everyone else, when really he just wanted to be a selfish baby. If he just said, I'm a selfish baby, this is what I'm going to do, I wouldn't have been as annoyed. You know what I mean? I would still be annoyed, but not as annoyed. You know, like, don't BS me. You know, if that's what you want, then say that's what you want. Don't say that's better for the common good, you know. Ugh. Anyways, it's going to be awesome, people. 15 tickets left. You probably should buy a ticket if you want to come. The Low Budget's first show in about 7 years. And it might be their last one ever. I mean, because Chris of the Low Budget lives in Germany, and he don't fly over that much. So, yeah, man, it's going to be rad.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So anyways, I would say play a song, but we're not doing songs this week because me, being the genius I am, said to myself, I should do a record sale the week before the show, and so I am super swamped. So we're not going to play a song this week. We're just going to talk. And here's what we're going to talk about. Two guys that are always harmonious, just like my show is going to be. Finally, the battle – I thought the battle was over 3 years ago, but now the battle is really, really, really over. John Joseph has agreed to a permanent injunction preventing him from using any derivation of the Cro-Mags mark. As the listeners surely know, for the past 40 years, the Cro-Mags have been fighting with each other, John Joseph and Harley Flanagan, on who owns the Cro-Mags and who wrote the songs. And about 3 years ago, it settled with Harley taking ownership of the Cro-Mags mark, but John Joseph being granted a license to tour and play as Cro-Mags JM. That's Cro-Mags John and Mackie. JM, not J-A-M, which he had performed in the 90s and even the 2000s, John Joseph sometimes was Cro-Mags J-A-M, which I thought was Cro-Mags Jam, but it's actually Cro-Mags John and Mackie. So anyways, it seemed like it was settled. Then there was that show in New York where at the height of COVID, where they all said COVID doesn't exist, and then a whole bunch of people got COVID at the show. Harley alleges that John posted as Cro-Mags J-A-M, not Cro-Mags J-M, which I looked for evidence. I didn't see it. Doesn't mean it didn't exist. I did not see it. And so, again, Harley sued John Joseph for trademark infringement and breach of their settlement contract. And yet again, I underestimated Harley. I thought, well, is the court really going to care the difference between J-M and J-M? Is that really confusing, especially because it's got a license for J-M? Well, the matter settled. And so now John Joseph has agreed to never use the Cro-Mags trademark in any form whatsoever, which finally, apparently, settles this 40-year-old battle, which we said happened 3 years ago, but I guess we were wrong, so maybe we're wrong again. What I will say is some people say Harley's dumb. Harley's not dumb. Harley's really, 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 really smart. He's crazy and wild, but he's not dumb. He's very smart. And I got to say, from a strategy standpoint, this is a masterclass in strategy. And that Harley sued for the trademark, settled for most of the rights, not all the rights, instead of fighting it to the death, because if he had fought to the death, maybe the other side would have fought back harder. And then he said to himself, I'm just going to wait for the other side to screw up, which I know they will. And sure enough, the other side did screw up, and then Harley claimed all of the chips for himself because A, the other side screwed up, and B, the other side was probably exhausted from the long battle, which was presumably settled but wasn't. So it just goes to show strategy, determination, and energy can get you a whole lot. I am really impressed with Harley's strategy and move here. Also, I'm really impressed with Harley's latest Cro-Mags releases and his solo stuff. Harley's latest stuff has been really, really good. And I really hope this battle is over. I mean, it doesn't make either of them look good, honestly. And so I do hope the battle is finally over. And I hope they stop nipping at each other, just because when they first started nipping at each other, people were like, oh, wow, they're two badasses. But now it's like these two again, you know, like these, another lover's quarrel, you know, so age of quarrel. So I hope the battle's over. I think I'm very impressed by Harley's strategy. Hallie Bullitt, what do you stand on this 40-year-old battle?
Well, I guess I just need some clarification, because I was unclear reading it. Like, so he had the permission to use Cro-Mags JM, but now he doesn't even have permission to do that. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, do you think it's really over? I mean, I kind of giggled. I chuckled a little bit when I read the last line of, like, you're right up there. I was like, I guess this is finally settled, because it just feels like these two will find something to pick at each other about. But yeah, I mean, I guess maybe it's over. We'll see. Time will tell. That's all I had to think about it.
And more, what do you think? Is the battle over? What do you think of Harley's strategy?
I really hope that the battle's over. I think Harley's strategy was really good, because it's like, oh yeah, you don't want like your band name associated with like COVID denial and stuff. Like, that was great. Just like, oh yeah, rug out from under you. You can't use this in any form at all. I thought that was really cool. But I, like, again, like I said, I hope it's over, but I don't think it is. I think there's going to be something. Like, I think maybe like the envelope will be pushed, or like they'll come up with, or like John Joseph will come up with like a different knockoff name that's very similar, or there'll be like something, or they'll pretend to make up, but it's just so he can get the name back or something. I think there's going to be more to the story in the coming years, the 40 years to come.
I hope not. I will say that as Harley doesn't want to be associated with COVID denial, which is probably true, but I think this is strictly personal. And I think anything that they bolt onto that is really just for the sake of combat, you know, or to win the fight, you know.
Right.
So anyways, well, we'll see. And Moore just interviewed this band Ganser.
Yeah. Yeah, so Ganser, really cool. They are out of Chicago, and they do really, really cool experimental post-punk. So they have a couple albums out under their belt now, and they just released their new EP, which is called Nothing You Do Matters. So it just came out, and there are three songs on the EP. There's People Watching, there's What Me Worry, which is a Mad Magazine reference, and then there's a remix of People Watching done by Angus of Liars. He also produced the EP. So they have a video for People Watching, and they have a video for What Me Worry, and both of the videos use something called LED volume backdrop technology. So this technology mm-hmm. like blowing minds here. It's the welcome to the future. So it's this really cool thing where like it's you can put a real setting behind it, and you can edit it in real time, and you can really play with reality and really distort reality and make you think that you're actually outside when you're not, or like all this kind of stuff. And this is like super, super cool like technology. They use it on The Mandalorian, they use it on like Game of Thrones, they use it on all sorts of really well-known, I guess, TV and movies and stuff. So in the interview, they kind of get into talking about using the technology and everything and how they wanted to showcase it, and at the same time have two videos that are connected and are very in tune with the songs, right? So I interviewed Nadia and Alicia. So they are co-vocalists, and Alicia is also the bassist. So they both work in creative industries. Nadia works in film, and Alicia's a graphic designer. So the visual component of the band has been there, like, again, since day one. One of the lines in the interview is that, like, the music comes first, but Ganser, they've always viewed it as an art project, which I think is really cool, because everything does. Like, everything goes together. There's meaning behind absolutely everything. And if you want to know more about that meaning, read the interview. They are really awesome people, and making really cool music and doing really cool things and pushing the genre to new and different heights, and also like opening different visual kind of fields and making you think and stuff. Like, that's one thing that I absolutely love about the band is, it's, oh, you think like this is reality, surprise, and kind of stuff like that. So they really play with that. And they do have, they also make use of humor and different things too, which is really interesting. And they have really, really good insights. So what do you guys think of the new EP and videos from Ganser?
I thought the videos were real cool. I think the band's cool. I always like when bands connect videos. I definitely like how this band has got kind of a post-punk, but also like a 90s alt-rock vibe, and I think they're cool and interesting. And Moore's interview is great, and everyone should read it.
Yeah! Thanks.
Wait a minute, now I'm going to do that thing that you guys were complaining about that sometimes guests would do.
Oh, no!
Was I supposed to read this? I don't know, I didn't get the memo. I don't feel like this was on the list of things I was supposed to look at.
It was that we did an audible, and here's another story.
Are you gonna tell us what you thought of it or no?
What's that?
Are you gonna tell us what you thought of it or no?
I just did. I said it was cool.
Oh, okay.
I said it was kind of cool, post punky, kind of 90s all rocky, and I like when videos are together, and I like how she gets buried and then unburied, and I think it's rad and interesting and artistic.
And also, there is a good amount of Smashing Pumpkins talk in the interview, so stay tuned, or read it.
And what's your stance on Smashing Pumpkins?
I know a couple of songs, but I have not had my Smashing Pumpkins moment. Fair. I haven't gotten really into them.
Here's something that I think Enmore is really into. Thought Crime have released a new song. It's called This Is My Breakdown. I get to pick the music. And it's off their upcoming album, D1G1T14L_DR1FT. And more, all the kids these days are listening to this freaky, spacey music. Grindcore meets glitchcore meets pop and soul. And so tell us, Emor, what do you think of Thought Crimes?
Yes.
Who's Carson Pace?
Carson Pace is the singer of the Callous Dow Boys.
Ah, indeed. Yes. I remember seeing them open for Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young in the 90s. It was great.
Indeed. Those very same folks.
I said to the people next to me, I said, hello, fellow young person. Aren't the Callous Dow Boys so good? Don't you enjoy their song, To Have and Have Not, or perhaps the song Dust in the Wind? And they said to me, yes, I love the acoustic melody of this band. And I said, I have all their t-shirts. So, and more, tell us about Thought Crimes.
This is just a great mental picture right now. Like.
And I said, are you going to buy some bootleg t-shirts out in the parking lot? And they said, yes, we will. Because bootleg t-shirts are only $10 each, and parking is only $8 because it's 1997, not 2022. And I said, that sounds good. Do you think we should buy some soda from the sketchy guys selling sketchy sodas where some of them are opened already? And they said, yes. And I'll be like, wow, is that the smell of marijuana in the air? And they said, yes, it is. I'm like, wow, here I am in Camden in 1997, watching the Callous Dow Boys open for Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. What a great memory.
So the song is exactly like that. It brings that energy to life. But Thought Crime are really, really cool. They are a cyber grind band. And one interesting thing is they are spread out through Illinois, Pennsylvania, and the UK. So they have members everywhere, kind of, which is really cool. And they keep in contact with the internet and with different things. So, this is my breakdown. I get to pick the music. First off, is just like a great title. It's awesome. And this is their second single off of Digital Drift. So that's very exciting. And Carson Pace is featured on it. And they're a singer of the Callous Dow Boys. And the Callous Dow Boys are awesome. And if you haven't checked them out, they do like this really like nuts, like post-hardcore kind of bonkers thing. Like, it's really, really cool. They just released a Celebrity Therapist, I think. So I'd recommend checking them out too. But this is my breakdown. I get to pick the music. Is a little heavier and a little more leaning into like more of the hardcore kind of side of things, mixed with like some of like cyber stuff and like PC music and like stuff like that. So it's just like, again, everything from Thought Crime is so cool because it's so creative and it's just bonkers and the lyrics are really cool and everything's just coming at you like just all the time. You don't have time to like really catch your breath or whatever. And it's really, really fascinating. It's I think it's great. And keep your eyes peeled on Punk News in the next couple weeks. There's going to be some more Thought Crime stuff roll in. So what do you guys think of this?
It reminded me of like something punky that I like meets something that I don't like. Like maybe like The Prodigy or something like my, I don't know. Like I connected to pieces of it. Just not, maybe not like the whole thing. As far as what would you say are this band's influences?
Oh my God. Like, it's kind of everything, to be completely honest. Like, they have like hardcore, they have hyperpop, they have other grindcore bands, they have, like post hardcore, they have like electronic music, like EDM, like all sorts of stuff. Like, it's pretty much, if it's a genre, they have done something with it.
Yeah, they've like scooped it in there somehow. I mean, said there were things about it that I liked. John, what did you think?
Well, I remember when I first saw Thought Crime, I rode my bicycle to Suncoast Video where they had a Ticketron, and I waited in line with people and I said, one ticket to Thought Crime, please. And while I was waiting in line, I said to people, have you read about this band Thought Crime and Melody Maker or perhaps Ray Gun Magazine? And they said, yes, I have, John. It is a great band. And And I said, yes, yes, they are. And we talked about that, and I went to Ticketron, and tickets were $19.95 plus a $4 service charge, which was very reasonable. And I went, and then, you know, we went to the parking lot, and we waited outside, and people were outside and just hanging out and say, we can't wait to see Thought Crime. And we went inside and saw them at the Electric Factory, and it was a wonderful evening had by all. Speaking.
So you loved this. Because it brought back such memories for you.
No, in reality, I'm interested in this kind of music. It doesn't quite connect with me. There's another band I saw called Machine Girl. Emma, do you like Machine Girl?
I have not heard of Machine Girl, but I'm going to write them down and check them out.
So Machine Girl is kind of on the same trip as this band, and I think it's cool that it's wild, new, and experimental and crazy. And I love how it upsets the set in their ways punk rockers.
Yes.
Because, and we'll talk about later, whenever I talk to the legends, Jello, Keith Morris, Blagg, you know, they're never against this kind of stuff. I don't know if they like it, but they're never like, that's not punk. I've never heard them say that ever. So I like it when people are really kind of making new sounds. That being said, just because something is new doesn't mean it's necessarily – it's very intense. Like grindcore is intense. Yes. And so there's a lot happening, and I'm listening to it, but I don't know if I hear – the song in there. I'm like, well, why are we bleeping and blipping here? And I guess you can make the argument, well, it's like Throbbing Gristle, which I do like, is it's not music for music's sake. It's a sonic experiment, which, okay, maybe that's what it is. But it's so intense, I do have trouble making it through a whole album, which maybe I'm just not as hardcore as I think I am. You know, like I'll listen to a hardcore record, like, yeah, you know, Damage is so great, you know. But then this is even kind of more intense sonically than Damage. It's more oppressive. And I'm like, oh, no more, Thought Crime, I can't take it. You guys weren't this rough when I saw you guys open for the Birds in 1994 at the Veterans Stadium. And so that being said, I don't want to be an old fart and write it off. I think it's interesting. I just wonder if it will click for me or if my – like, let me give you a great example. When I first heard Slayer, I did not like it at all. It didn't even sound like music. Because my brain had never heard music like that before, and it took me a little while for my brain to be able to comprehend it, and then I heard the music in Slayer, you know? And so maybe this is that way, too. Or maybe my synapse is already formed, so maybe I'll never hear it. So I think the issue is that my brain can't hear the music in here, and it's focusing on the wrong elements. Like, when I first heard Slayer, like, all I heard was, like, the drum and the bass, and, like, it just sounded like noise beyond that, which now I love Slayer, you know? So maybe my brain just hasn't, you know, found its way into that. Same with a lot of 90s dancehall. I used to hate 90s Jamaican dancehall, and now I love a lot of it. So, you know, maybe just I haven't come around to it. Here's something I have come around to. And I don't have a whole lot to say about this. Patti Smith is going to release another book. It's basically just pictures that she put on Instagram, which I don't know if people will be into that or not. I just saw Patti Smith for the first time about 3 weeks ago, and she was incredible. Mm. It was Patti Smith, like you know, Patti Smith is older, but it was Patti Smith from 1977. It sounded like her. The band sounded like Patti Smith, and she did Free Money, which is my favorite song right off the bat. No, I think she opened with Redondo Beach, then Free Money, and she did like all the hits, and it was really an amazing. It was so amazing. I didn't stay for the War on Drugs. I left right away. That's how amazing it was. Because I know, as surely as great as Patti Smith is, I can't handle how great the War on Drugs is. And so Patti Smith really blew. I mean, she really blew me away. The reason I put the story in the queue is because whenever I go see Patti Smith and I talk to people about seeing Patti Smith, older guys, they're like, yeah, she sure is wacky. Did she do a lot of talking? Did she read Walt Whitman's poetry? Yeah, she did read Walt Whitman's poetry. And yeah, it was kind of weird. But Patti Smith is kind of weird, and that's what's great about Patti Smith. You don't write Redondo Beach if you're a normal person. You don't write Free Money if you're a normal person. You don't write Horse if you're – like, I love that Patti Smith is a total weirdo. I mean, total weirdos make the best music. And that being said, though, is her book of Instagram pictures going to be that interesting? I mean, I think it's cool that she's putting it out. I'm not going to buy it. It's probably just pictures, you know. There is a certain – it is with people like Pat with trailbreaking – with groundbreaking artists – there's this weird thing that happens. On one end, everything they do gets like, oh, it's amazing. It's the best thing ever. Like, well, it's really just a picture of a signpost, you know. Or people get kind of like angry at them for being kind of weird. And they're like, oh, did she play the songs or did she talk between the songs? He's like, yeah, she talked between the songs. It's Patti Smith, you asshole. You know like they get like angry that like this person, I guess, isn't fitting into their exact box they want them to be in. Or they're angry that Patti Smith isn't a jukebox here to just play the songs you want and leave. Patti Smith is an artist. And so they get angry about that. Anyway, that's my take on Patti Smith. She's real cool live. You should go see her. Hallie Bullet, Patti Smith, what do you think?
I mean, I've also seen her live, and she was just awesome. Yeah, I'm totally with you. It just doesn't feel like you don't feel like you're missing. You feel like you're still getting like the experience of seeing her, even if like me, you didn't get to see her in the 70s or 80s or back in the day. You know, it's like you leave that experience being like, oh yeah, I fucking saw Patti Smith. Yeah. You know what I mean? But some bands, it's like maybe you didn't see them back in the day. You try to catch them like later in their career and you're like, eh, that wasn't really it. Like I didn't really see them. Like, you know?
Yeah.
I just think she's like a consummate artist. And I think like for the people that follow her on Instagram and are like big fans of this stuff, I think they just like, I mean, her talents do cross over. She's always had an interest in visual art. Her talents do lean that way. It's not as random as just some other singer deciding to put a book of photos, you know? And I think they're her Instagram photos, but I think she shoots with like a real camera. I mean, I think she takes photography pretty seriously. She just happens to post them on Instagram, but like to categorize them as just like Instagram photos, I think kind of belittles like what they are. Like, she puts thought into them and considers them part of her art, you know? And I think people really were excited about like the glimpse that they got into her life, you know, and her perspective from seeing these. I was a little confused though, because it said that there were also going to be like vintage photos included in the book. Did you guys remember reading that?
Yeah.
And I found that confusing because I was just like, well, what vintage photo, like vintage photos that she took or that someone else took? Like I was a little confused by that. But I don't know. I think it'll be cool, like most things that Patti Smith does. And what do you think?
Yeah, I haven't been able to see Patti Smith, but if she comes out around here, I want to see her because I think that'd just be absolutely amazing. Like just like I've seen live videos from like recently, and she's still like she sounds awesome. She's doing all sorts of stuff, and like I'd love to see her. This was kind of interesting because the way that Penguin wrote the description for the book makes it sound like Hallie, like what you said, like it makes it sound diminished. It doesn't really make it sound like what it is. Yeah. Like it's obviously an art book. There's lots going on. There's, I'm going to assume, going to be like captions with the stories, like how she does on her Instagram account, where it's not just like, here, look at my coffee. It's like, yeah. This coffee was brewed from the Arabica beans that I saw them pick, and like all this kind of stuff. And it's really cool. So I don't think I would buy the book, but like when the library has it, I'm checking that out because I think it would be cool to like flip through and see what it's all about. And I don't think that the description did it justice.
Well, there you have it. Speaking of awesome things, Off has finally released The Long Lost. Not Long Lost, the long gestating, long exploding, crumbling, argumentative, troubled album, Free LSD. And it's awesome, and it's wild, and it's cool. And I interviewed Keith Morris and Dimitri Coates about it at Punk News. And I think the album is great. And Keith was the man, and Dimitri was the man. And the album is kind of far out. It's got some experimental things in it and just some straight-up punk rippers. I haven't been able to do a review yet because I've been so busy, and I feel real bad about it because I want to do a review. I think the album is great. I think the album maybe didn't get quite the notes they were hoping it would get, which is kind of a shame. Like, I didn't see it, like, posted all over the internet, you know, being like, oh, the new Off album's out, you know, which I wish they would have. I think it's the exact right move for them to make. I think that had they just done Off number 4, it would have been kind of stale. But because it's got the freak experimental stuff in it and the classic Off sound to it, I just think it's totally rad. And I can't wait to do a review. I don't think I'm going to have time to do it tomorrow. I really wish I did. There's so many awesome records out. Off, Blag of the Dwarves, Effed Up's a new EP. Something else just came out too. So there's so much awesome stuff out right now. But I'm just thrilled that Off really did knock it out of the park. There are rumors that maybe it'll be the last Off record, or maybe Off's not going to tour a whole lot after this. We'll see. I'm definitely going to go see him. And more, did you enjoy the Off album and my extended interview with them that that no one seemed to read, and that they just kind of insulted off at the bottom of.
I was so surprised at that, to be honest, because I was like, oh, you have comments. I'm going to read the comments. I was like, they didn't read this. There's no blatant editorializing. Too like, long. I don't understand. Sorry?
I think my article was too long for them. I wanted to do like a full-on profile Rolling Stone circa 1985 or 1978 style feature. And yeah. I just think everyone wants, you know, it's the 500-word bangers these days.
Oh, no. Uh-uh. Nope. It's all long stuff. That's it. Nothing is condensed. Uh-uh. You miss stuff. Like, it sucks. I'm all for as much information as possible.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I got a bunch of old Rolling Stones recently, and a bunch of old Trouser Presses, and they have like these long form profiles, and it's like heaven. It's like, oh my God, this is so good. You know, you don't get that anymore. And yeah. that's what I want to write music wise, aside from books, is long form profiles. That's my favorite thing to do, and it seems like you don't care, kind of don't want them anymore. You know, and the problem with long form profiles is. The best profiles are always the objective ones that comment on people's strengths and weaknesses. Like these days, almost all music press is, wow, this band is the greatest. They're so good. The new record's great. Everyone loves them. You know, or, you know, Bill had a drug problem, but now he doesn't, and now he's back again. You know, that's like every profile ever. Whereas in the Rolling Stones in the 70s and the 80s and the Trouser Presses, they would say the negative things. And with this off one, I wasn't negative, but I really did want to be objective and talk about what happened with the collapse of the original band, which the band themselves probably doesn't want to be talked about, but you got to talk about it if you're going to be a real music journalist. But on the other hand, I did a profile before this, which I think really bummed the artist out, and it was complimentary, but they just, you know, bands now are so used to, you know, so-and-so is the best, and the new album is great, and they're going to take over the world, that when you kind of do an old-school profile, they don't always like it. Or maybe the counter-argument is maybe I wasn't which were precise enough, and maybe I, you know, wrongly painted an artist or two recently. So I don't know. Emma, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, no problem. I really like the album. I've only listened to it through once, just because that's all I've had time to do. But, like, I can't wait to go back and listen to it again because the first listen was great. I like the alien kind of concepts and stuff. And it was cool reading the your interview where I think Dimitri Coates is talking about it. And it's like, yes, there's the alien race that doesn't want us to make this album, and then that wants us to make this album. And this is kind of what it is. So I thought that was really fun and cool. And yeah, like the interview was good. I liked reading it. It's nice to read something that has like, that's interesting, that has a lot kind of going on. So I don't think it was too long. I think it was really cool. The one thing that stuck out that was just really funny was you're talking about the podcast that Keith Morris was on, like the conspiracy one, and it's "Does Bigfoot Wear Shoes?" was like written in there, and it's like that. So I wrote down my theory about Bigfoot wearing shoes, because that's where I am right now. So the Bigfoot community got weirded out when they saw people were starting to make casts of their footprints. So when we see a footprint now, it's because one blew a shoe. And that's it. See? It all makes sense now.
I buy it.
Yes. Hallie, what do you think of the new Off in John's interview?
I need to give the album another listen, honestly, but I'm confused because I thought they weren't going to do the movie because the Kickstarter didn't work out, but now they're saying the movie's coming out next year. Is it just like everything is going to take longer because they didn't get them? Didn't they say they just weren't? I thought they just weren't going to do it. Never the case, John?
No. So what happens was the original movie was something called Watermelon. They did a Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter failed by $25,000. Yeah. Then the band essentially fell apart. So then they kind of rewrote the movie and rewrote the album, and actually there actually is an earlier, almost finished version of this album with the original lineup. Now this is the new lineup, and they actually have already filmed the quote new movie, which is going to be free LSD. So the movie that was Watermelon is now Free LSD. They have shot parts of Watermelon, but is incomplete. And now Free LSD has been completed and will be out next year.
Got it. What a saga. What a journey. What a journey this artistic vision has gone through. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think it's cool. Do you think it's going to be their last album, John?
Well, I don't know. They put so much work into this album, and Keith has talked about how he's 67, I think, and he doesn't want to tour forever, you know. So I don't know. He might go the way of Iggy Pop. I mean, I kind of hope not, but he might go the way of Iggy Pop. Say, well, I'm just going to do something totally unexpected now and do an album of me reading French poetry over jazz from the 30s. Which is interesting, but it's not what I want as a fan, whereas this album is what I want as a fan. It's a hard, freaky, far-out album, you know?
But it's still, it is definitely a departure. I mean, I know what you're saying. It's not as great a departure as the Iggy stuff, but it's a big departure.
I would agree. However, I would say quite wisely, like David Bowie, the inherent skeleton is still the same. It's still kind of like a three-chord off bangers, and they put new stuff on top, which is usually, if you ask me, the best way to do it. There's no one way to do it, but it's a really good way to do it, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Okay. So, anyways, let's see here. This is just we'll just blast this real quick. Misfits, Circle Jerks, and Tiger Army are playing Las Vegas on New Year's Eve. Sounds kind of cool. I might go, but I'm probably not going to go. Are the Misfits going to keep playing shows? It looks like, yes, they're going to keep playing shows forever, which is kind of cool. Circle Jerks did kind of a funny post. Our last show of the year is going to be in Las Vegas on New Year's Eve. Well, it's hard for that not to be your last show of the year. On the poster, it has Las Vegas, but they crossed out Las and put Hell Vegas. I'm like, that's kind of weak. They could have come up with something better than that.
Vegas.
Looks cool. I might go, probably not. But if I was in Vegas, I almost definitely would go. Halibut looks cool, or is the Misfits run the gamut? Is it over? Is the party over?
No, I mean, it looks cool. But, like, who is trying to make Las Vegas, like, the new, like, the center of punk rock, right? Like, doesn't it feel a little bit like that? Like, this big show is happening in Vegas on New Year's Eve. Like, why Vegas? I don't think of Vegas as a punk town, but then they're getting the punk museum and they get like punk rock bowl. I mean, I understand why punk rock bowling started there. Is that like, was that the beginning of all of this? And now just like Vegas is like some kind of punk mecca?
I'll give you what I know. Yes, punk rock bowling did start this. So that kind of makes sense. But also, if you're trying to establish a business or an event in Las Vegas, Vegas is very friendly to that because they want people to come to go to the casinos. Whereas in other cities like Baltimore, you got to pay for this license. This guy has to come inspect you. You know, you have to, like in Asbury Park, you have to use the Asbury Park crew for your stage. You can't use your own crew. So Vegas is very friendly towards that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one very helpful info. So, also, I don't know where we got this Misfits picture from on the Punk News website. I've never seen this. I mean, there's not that many Misfits pictures. I've never seen this one before. Also,
I've never seen that one. Yeah. I had that same thought, John. I was like, I've never seen this picture before.
I don't know what – this is clearly the later era because there's Glenn, Jerry, Doyle, and who's in the back? That's not – there's probably Bobby Steele, not Robo, so it's right before Earth AD. However, if you look at the picture, it's one of the rare pictures where you can see Glenn's nose before. Actually, never mind. I'll tell you guys after the show. Listen, man, Misfits are cool. Rad. Let's see here. We'll go kind of quick with this one, too. Abby Ooze, a.k.a. Jade from Posers, who are long since broken up, and we probably should stop saying Posers because that band has been gone about 4 or 5 years now, so why keep bringing them up? But Abby Ooze's last record was R.I.P., and it looked like it was going to be the last thing she ever put out, but it's not. She's got a new EP coming out, and it's called The Forestdale Sessions, and it's got a Shangri-La's cover and 6 other songs, and the first track is streaming, and I bought this tape right away because it sounds real good, and I hope Abby Ooze keeps doing stuff and more.
Yes. I was very surprised because I thought that the last time we talked about it with the RIP EP, I thought that was going to be it, and I really liked that. I thought it was really good. So I was very pleasantly surprised to see that there's going to be new Abby Ooze stuff. The single, Cry Cry Alone. I did like it. I thought it was neat. It did kind of give me like the a little bit of like garage punk meets like the 60s kind of bands like the Shangri-Las, which I thought was cool. So I'm excited to hear all of it and hear the cover, because I think just with this, it's going to sound really cool. Hallie, what do you make of the new Abby Ooze?
She's cool. I love her. I mean, I thought maybe you guys were being a little too literal in your interpretation of her, like, her RIP like album title. That didn't necessarily mean to me that she was like retiring the band. So yeah, I'm like super, super happy to see her putting out new stuff, but not totally surprised. And this sounds, yeah, this just, she's great. She's just great. It's like, John, who is this for, like, what would you say she's combining here with her sound? It's like, obviously it's Ramonesy, it's super pop punky, but it's very garagey. Like, what are you, if you had to come up with like two bands that she's
Well, we could say Ramones, but everybody says Ramones, and that's like too easy. So I will say, let me see here. I'll say X-Ray Specs meets the Retard, or J Retard.
Sure. Yeah. I like it. I think she's great. Can't wait to hear the rest of this stuff.
My only criticism is, as because we were harshly critical on the Punk News podcast, she's putting out all these like small releases with great songs on them. I kind of wish she would sit down, take all the best stuff, do really good studio recordings, and release like an amazing album. She could do it. She's got the songs. But instead, they're kind of in these low-key cassettes, which are kind of low risk, you know?
I know, but like, do people care about albums anymore? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, is the album just like, unless you're just old and that's the format that you're like attached, like do the youngins care about albums, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, when I was seeing Kansas on the Point of No Return tour, everyone was like, oh, have you seen the new album? It's got the cool cover, and you read the lyrics and there's this song, Carry On My Wayward Son, which is about, you know, like, it seems to me all the youth love the albums, you know? They don't care if it's LP or A-track. They love them both. Listen, I'm going to pull an audible, and we're going to do one last story. And the one last story is, do the youth care about albums and publishing? Because today it was announced very recently that Mickey Lee, brother of Joey Ramone, owner of one half of the decision-making powers of the Ramones, and one-fourth of the ownership of the Ramones, has sold the publishing of Joey Ramone to the following company. That company is the following. And my computer's freezing right while I'm pulling it up. So I'm just going to keep talking while we do pull it up. I was a bit taken aback by this, and I realize it's easy for me to talk. The publishing was sold for $10 million. Which really makes has two really interesting things. It was sold to independent music publisher Primary Wave Music and investment company Brookfield Asset Management. And listen, whenever I want my art to be handled with taste and tact and to preserve the artist, I go to Brookfield Asset Management. They really know how to, you know, tastefully take care of art. Here's what Mickey Lee said. I'm happy to welcome Primary Wave as partners in my brother's maybe they're wrong here. Maybe it isn't even just publishing, because here's what Mickey Lee's statement says. Well, I'll have to read into this before I post about it tomorrow. I'm happy to welcome Primary Wave Music as partners in my brother's interests in Ramones. And I'm going to say why that's important in a second. I'm thoroughly convinced of their eagerness to perpetuate his legacy and their sincerity about doing it in a way that will never compromise his credibility. I very much am looking forward to working with them, which, I mean, these kind of statements really annoy me, because he's not working with them. He sold them that. Like, these kind of statements are actually required as part of sales contracts, and that it's like, we're partners, you're working with us. And some of my clients actually have legacy recordings that they've sold to certain entities, which I usually advise against, but sometimes clients just want to do it. And these clients that like buy these things, like, we're partners. It's like, okay, we're partners. So what's the decision-making percentage? Well, 100% us, 0% you. And what's the profit split? you know, 100% us or 90% us, 10% you. So how is that a partnership when we get royalties? And it really, you know, it's like, it's not a partnership, it's a purchase, which really, like, I hate how there's so much bullshit language here. But also, so this is why this is very interesting to me. Mickey Lee and Linda Ramone have butted heads ever since Joey and Johnny died. I mean, they until this past week, they were fighting like a month ago about some BS, much like Harley and John Joseph. And Mickey Lee's big attack against Linda is that she doesn't treat the Ramones catalog with respect and she changes history. But then Mickey Lee goes and sells the Joey Ramone catalog and to some to Brookfield Asset Management, and it's unclear. See, the articles say publishing, but here Mickey Lee says his brother's interest in the Ramones. Well, the Joey Ramone estate interest is much bigger than the publishing. The publishing is just one part. There's other parts with regards to sound recording royalties. There's other parts with regards to intellectual property, trademark, who owns the name Ramones. So I will say I was a little disappointed that Mickey Lee, I mean, does Mickey Lee need money that bad? I would hope that he'd be more interested in preserving the legacy of Joey Ramone. And I don't know if he has kids or not. I guess he doesn't. But you think you can find a nephew or a niece or someone that could handle the catalog with skill and knowledge and preserve that legacy as opposed to just some to Brookfield Asset Management. So I did think it was a little annoying to me. And listen, it's easy for me to talk. It's not me to get the $10 million. You know, Mickey Lee's always dinging on Linda, but he's the one that sold Joey's side. The other thing is, of course, there's always hostility between Linda and Mickey as deciding what to do with the Ramones catalog. I will say both of them have done a very good job of doing reissues with dignity that really preserve and elevate the source recordings. The recent Ramones box set that had all the 80s out, not all the, a lot of the 80s albums in it, so well done. The Mega Deluxe reissues of the first four albums, so well done. And the reissues from 2002, I would say second best reissues ever after the Crass reissues, which are the best ever. So I think the 2002 reissues are amazingly well done and fantastic. I think they've done a great job. However, so Linda and Mickey always fight each other and argue as to what's going to happen and what decision should we make. But now that Mickey's out of the equation, Brookfield Asset Management is walking into a hostile situation because I think Linda – I would think Linda would be annoyed because now instead of dealing with a person or a company run by a person, she's dealing with an asset management company, which is totally different. Also, interestingly, I don't know how stalemates get decided between Mickey Lee and Linda, but now Brookfield Asset Management has to deal with Linda. And if I was Linda, I would just cause them as much trouble as I can. I don't know if she's thinking of selling, but if she is, then Mickey selling is even better for her because now she's got the other half, so she can get more for her half than Mickey Lee could get for his half or quarter, as it were. And so there's a lot to unpack here. I was a little disappointed by Mickey Lee's action, but you know, it's easy for me to say, isn't it? You know, Hallie Bullitt, what do you think? Do you care? Or do you not care at all?
No, I mean, I'm for sure disappointed, but yeah, I just, you know, you imagine that, you know, what's behind this has got to be like, right, just there's just a handful of obvious things here. You mentioned like maybe he just needs the money, which is fair, you know, if you need the money then you do. Maybe, I don't know, is it just a lot of work managing this, and maybe he's getting older and doesn't want to have to do just that, the doesn't want to have that responsibility anymore? Or is the butting heads with Linda maybe something that would make someone want to walk away from this, just to be like, I don't want to deal with this conflict all the time. But I'm with you, you know, to me, he's like really in the best position to safeguard this material and to protect the legacy. And so it's disappointing that he's stepping away, but he's such a good guy that I just have to assume that there's a good reason for it, you know.
Brookfield Asset Management, they're all real good guys too. I mean, those guys
I mean, you're right, the statement is bullshit, you know. Is just really, yeah, just total bullshit. There's no other way to really describe it.
And more, did you put a bid on this asset, or like was there a negotiation between you and Brookfield Asset Management, or how'd that go?
Well, they did have more money, so unfortunately they won. But I know I'd be able to handle it better. And in the next like couple years, if we see like what's like a really like Joey Ramone branded pens or something. Like, we know who did it.
I mean, honestly, like, I don't even, like, there's a million Ramone shirts all over, which doesn't bother me at all. I think it's kind of cool, honestly. I don't know. It just does, like, well, actually, it goes back to the thing is, like, whenever a company buys a website or a piece of art, it never gets handled, like, to a better extent or as good. It always just kind of becomes tacky and kind of gets, you know, everyone's selling their catalog these days. Bruce Springsteen, Stevie Nicks, Mickey Lee. And so I still don't know what's going on. Like, music is worth less now than it's ever been worth. And so we're missing a piece of the puzzle. Just like I have no idea how to throw a concert and I'm missing a piece of the puzzle. Yet again, when it comes to multi-million-dollar music asset deals, I'm missing a piece of the puzzle. So, anyways, yeah, it's kind of a bummer. Anyways, I would say we're going to play a song, but we're not going to play any songs this week. So take that. Hallie Bullet, any last words for the listeners tonight?
Bandcamp Friday tomorrow, baby. I've got my shopping cart filled with some stuff.
What are you buying?
So let me listen to it all once I bought it, and then I'll talk it all up.
All right, fair enough. And more, will you be indulging in Bandcamp Friday?
Heck yeah, Bandcamp Friday is the best. There is so much cool stuff, like the new Ganser EP. The new Cluttered EP, which we premiered last week. Lots of really cool stuff, like Off. Support artists. Do Bandcamp Friday.
I always love when artists release like limited things or even like limited digital, like live albums or whatever. I love that. So I'm looking forward to that. So yeah, people, listen, buy stuff from artists and come to the low budget show, but there's only 15 tickets left, so maybe you can. We'll see. Anyway, see you next week. Oh, I'm losing my